We're moving to agenda paper 15 and management commentary.
Okay.
Oh, hold on. Sorry.
You aren't on mute, that's fine.
Sorry, I'm having problems.
Shall I pick it up, John?
No, I think I'm back. Sorry about that, everybody. Yes, sorry. We're moving to management commentary and agenda paper 15. And last month, the board gave the staff permission to start the balloting process for an exposure draft of the revised practice statement on management commentary. And this month, we'd like to ask you about three sweep issues that have arisen as we've started to draft it. The first sweep issue relates to application of the practice statement by entities whose financial statements are not prepared in accordance with IFRS standards. And the question is whether those entities should be able to assert that their management commentary complies with the practice statement, and if so, whether any restrictions should apply. The staff recommendations are in paragraphs 13 and 16 of the paper. Firstly, in paragraph 13, we recommend that if an entity's management commentary complies with the practice statement, the entity should be able to state that fact, even if its financial statements are not prepared in accordance with IFRS standards. And then secondly, in paragraph 16, we recommend that if an entity's financial statements are not prepared in accordance with IFRS standards, the entity should be required to state in its management commentary the basis on which the financial statements are prepared. Questions one and two for the board ask if you agree with those recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Joan. Does anybody want to comment? Mary and then Tadal.
Joan. I think good analysis, but in the end, I end up with a preference that we say you can only apply the management commentary if you have if it accompanies financial statements that have been prepared using IFRS standards. I think we should take an approach similar to the one we have used with the IFRS for SMEs, in terms of saying if there are jurisdictions that want to use the, in that case, the IFRS for SMEs as local GAAP, we are encouraging of them doing so, but with a local GAAP label on it rather than an IFRS for SMEs. If they wanted to apply to entities that would be outside the scope of our standard, and I think we should take a similar approach with the management commentary, saying you can only say this is the IFRS management commentary if it accompanies IFRS financial statements. Thank you.
Tadal?
Thank you. So I think that we should specifically ask this in the document that goes out, the exposure draft, because I'm just thinking that, as we mentioned here, if someone prepares on a cash basis, I may have a lot of situations that the management commentary may be very much inconsistent with the objectives of it is prepared for. And I would ask in the exposure draft before. I'm not saying that because it's a sweep issue, but I would make a more thorough study to be sure that we can go in this direction. But I think that, just building on Mary's comments in the previous session, that I would prefer including and asking than simply omitting this one. Thank you.
So what would you propose would be in the ED? So you could...
What would be ask whether people see any problem in allowing those entities preparing financial statements in another framework other than IFRS to use the management commentary and say that they comply with that? I would ask, because that's a good way to also receive some feedback on whether they see any problem with that.
So not express a preliminary view?
No.
Okay. Nick?
Thank you. So I think the principles that we've set out in the practice statement are clearly compatible with other reporting standards. And I don't think they don't need to be used solely along IFRS requirements. I think it's important, though, that an entity would state the basis on which their financial statements are being prepared. But I guess overall, I would support this. I still think it's a fairly theoretical possibility, though, is how I look at it.
Thanks, Nick. Bruce?
Thanks, Sue. I'd actually support the staff recommendation. I mean, I think we've made a clear decision that this is not part of the IFRS standards. And I mean, to comply with this or not is not a requirement to say that you've complied with IFRS. And I agree with Nick's comment. I mean, I think that the compatibility of this with other reporting works. I think there are jurisdictions up there where their standards are almost identical to IFRS, but not, you know, there may be some small nuances and differences, or even the SME standard, where somebody could decide this is a better way to do it and to do their management commentary. And I would hate to be restricting people from using that and claiming compliance with what we're saying is a practice statement simply because they haven't used full IFRS. I think if we felt that this was something that should be there, that IFRS is such a fundamental factor in terms of meeting this, then to me, the decision should have been, well, hang on, this would be an optional standard. In other words, if you're going to apply with management commentary, you apply that in full. If you don't, you don't. Which is why I was quite comfortable with where the staff get.
Okay, thanks, Bruce. Françoise?
Yes, thank you. I think I'm very much in agreement with Nick and Bruce as they've just spoken. And I think that if people do a good job applying our practice statement, I'm happy that they claim the IFRS brand on that management commentary.
Okay, thank you. Martin?
And I agree more with Mary, because I think if, maybe it is rare, but if a company is preparing the financial statements on some basis which we think is not a good measurement basis for performance, but then does a discussion in the MD&A of this, maybe what we think is not a good basis or a stupid basis to measurement performance, discussing with the results based on that and calling that a kind of IFRS management commentary, I think it isn't. At least an issue. Therefore, I would think we should not allowing that. We should only allow to name that if the basis is on the financial statements, also based on IFRS. Thanks.
Matt?
Thank you, Sue. I just wanted to add an observation on Nick's comment that this would largely be a theoretical situation. When we were considering this as the staff, the situation in particular we were envisaging is where a regulator might choose to impose a requirement to comply with the practice statement on all entities, but some of the entities may not be preparing IFRS, but are required to prepare the region's equivalent of a management commentary at the moment. So we did see that there was a real possibility this issue might arise.
Okay, thank you. So I think we're ready to vote on questions 1 and 2. Can I get a show of hands on question 1?
Nine.
And question 12.
Okay. Okay, so if we move on now to discuss the second sweep issue, which relates to the concept of freedom from error. at previous meetings, the board tentatively decided that the practice statement should require information and management commentary to possess the qualitative characteristics described in the conceptual framework. And it decided how to include most of the characteristics in the practice statement, but didn't reach a decision on freedom from error. So we've gone away and thought a little bit more about this. And Agenda Paper 15 discusses how the concept of freedom from error could be applied to management commentary. And it considers whether and how other narrative reporting frameworks have referred to freedom from error. The staff recommendations are in paragraph 35. And we're recommending that the practice statement refers to accuracy as a required characteristic of management commentary. And it explains that this doesn't mean that management commentary has to be perfectly accurate in all respects. Accuracy manifests itself in different ways in different types of information. And the degree of precision needed and attainable varies depending on the nature of the information. So we also recommend that the practice statement gives examples of how accuracy manifests itself in different types of information. Examples it could include are listed in paragraph 35B. Question 3 for the board is below paragraph 35, and it asks if you agree with the recommendations.
Can I come in? So Joan, I agree with the general approach that you're taking here. The one thing that I pondered a little bit when I was looking at this was that I noticed that in some of the other examples that you'd included, a few of the other bodies, including the Climate Disclosure Standards Board, had made a specific comment about how sometimes it might be necessary to be explicit about the degree of uncertainty. I think that could be some of the provided in management commentary, given it's, you know, we're hoping that people will be, you know, looking out for long periods of time. So I'd just be keen that that be captured somewhere. I don't know whether you'd put that under the freedom from error label or not. I think that's an important observation.
I think we've captured it elsewhere, but if not, I'll make sure we capture it somewhere.
May I come in? Thank you. Well, I agree with the staff reasoning and discussion, but not with the exact conclusion. It's just a question of words where I disagree. First of all, I know that in paragraph 35, you explain accuracy by things being accurate. And I think you're going to get comments that these things are circular. And the second, so I would prefer that we keep our freedom from error that belongs to our vocabulary, and that we have your definition using the term accurate as it is used and taken on board Xu's comment.
Zhen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I agree with to change the wording from free from error to accuracy. I think this wording is quite positive and actually can encourage the preparers to provide relevant information, because otherwise people are very hesitated to disclose more information because they worry about whether it's free from error or not. So this is first. Second, I also agree with the conclusion you made in paragraph 34, particularly. The practice statement will focus on those outcomes rather than those controls and the processes, which to make sure that those outcomes are met or not. So this principle is very important, I agree. But when I look at the examples you're giving to support those principles, I feel that maybe there's some inconsistency there. For example, paragraph 35, B3, you mentioned that you also require them to apply appropriate processes. And also B3 B5, you also mentioned to require them to explain how those judgments has been reached. So I think all those actually related to the process, how they reach those final outcome. So I think we should focus, the example giving should focus on those outcome rather than how they make those judgment and the process behind that. So in this case, I really like the B4 you mentioned. If those information, those outcome based on reasonable and supportable information, all right. So that is the basic principle we should require those company to apply when you develop those examples.
Okay,
Mary.
Joan, I support the basic idea of including a discussion of this characteristic. I just, reading through the alternatives you considered in the paper, felt I had a sense that freedom from material errors discussed in paragraph 27 was closer, especially when I thought about qualitative information. To me, accuracy is maybe more associated with quantitative information. If we were to go the freedom from material error route, I would not do it via reliability, given all of our troubled history with reliability having different uses in IFRS standards in the conceptual framework. I think I would just go maybe and directly from the basic point of free from error means free from material error. Just put it in that way. Thank you.
Tom?
Yeah, I support the staff's recommendation, and I think they've done a good job of producing wording that works reasonably well. I think as we go through the exposure process, people will come in with suggestions where we will refine it, but this is, I think, an excellent starting point. I would echo a little bit on something about uncertainty should be in there. You'll have to do it carefully, though, because I often think in terms of, you know, for every point estimate, there's an underlying distribution, and certainly what we don't want is people trying to estimate the distribution, giving a pile of statistical references to the distribution. So the funny thing is how, I think something on uncertainty should be in there. You have to think very carefully how you want to phrase it. But that's probably the only missing item that I've identified in 35B.
Okay, Rika.
Thank you, Hans. I principally support the staff recommendation, especially about what stated in paragraph 35A, but I maybe echo what Jin Zhao said. I think some example within paragraph 35B might be difficult in practice to apply when they are making a judgment about what means and what the degree of accuracy of a precision should be necessary for MC comparing with financial statements. So I think we should be more stand based on the principle of what we said in the first paragraph 35A about we understand the different type of the information and then different precision is needed for those information stated in MC. Thank you.
Bruce.
Thank you, Hans. I agree, obviously, with the inclusion of this, like many others. I actually had the same comment that Mary did, when you talk about accuracy, it sounds more like in my mind, it immediately came out as a quantitative, not a qualitative thing. I also preferred using I preferred not using accuracy, because I think if you use the freedom wording, it aligns a lot more to what we've got in the conceptual framework, and I just think that people see a familiarity with the wording as opposed to using accuracy.
Okay, Anne?
Yes, I'm in the camp that would go with freedom from material error for a couple of reasons. I also noted something Francoise pointed out, that there was some circularity in the explanation of accuracy. So that's something that people will come back on. And so I support the freedom from material error for the reasons that we're dealing a lot with qualitative information. And for me, accuracy lines up with much more with the numbers. Thank you.
Nick?
Yep, just to chip in, I prefer the word accuracy to freedom from error. And just as a reminder, you know, we've said on a number of occasions, we need to remember that the readers of the practice statements are not those people who are familiar with the conceptual framework. They have come from a different world, the language is very different, and I think accuracy is something that they will feel more, have more empathy with.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
Ten.
Just from a drafting perspective, though, the staff, I think it would be important that we make sure we try and be clear as possible that this isn't just a quantitative concept, given some of the comments that were raised, which I think are fair sort of flag.
Okay. Right, so
okay, yeah.
We turn now to the final issue in the paper, and this relates to the wording of the objectives in the practice statement. So at previous meetings, the board has gradually approved an overall objective for management commentary and disclosure objectives for the six areas of content. And now that we can look at all of these objectives together and in response to comments from board members, we'd like to suggest various refinements to the wording. And the refinements are listed in table one, which follows paragraph 43 of the paper. So the first, in row A, would align the wording of the overall objective with the wording we later developed for the disclosure objectives for the areas of content. The second in row B would strengthen the wording of the headline disclosure objectives for the areas of content and align them more closely with the wording the board has used in recent IFRS standards and is testing in its targeted standard level review of disclosures project. The third refinement in row C would strengthen the wording of the assessments paragraphs to better reflect the intention that an entity would need to comply with all components of the disclosure objectives for the areas of content. And then finally, the fourth refinement in row D would amend the wording of the specific disclosure objectives for the areas of content, just to be clearer that they are intended to be objectives rather than requirements for specific information. Question four for the board follows paragraph 47. We'd like to hear any comments you have on our suggested refinements.
Are there any comments, Jen Chow?
Thank you, Hans. I just want to comment that I agree with those wording changes, in particular to include value creation in the overall objective of management commentary. I think it's consistent because inevitable when we discuss those specific disclosure objective, we needed to address those value creation. And secondly, for users, for investors, I think when they read the management commentary, they also not only want to know how companies to generate future cash flows. Sometimes, especially for those technology companies at earlier stage, maybe those companies did not generate too much cash flows, but they create values, not only values to the investor, but also other stakeholders. So I think to deliver those kind of information, is very useful and to include in the overall objective. I fully support for supportive the changes of the wordings. Thank you.
Nick.
Thanks. I guess this comes back to the effective application materiality that we've talked about several times already this morning. And although I don't agree with all the reasons set out in paragraph 46, I do agree with where staff land. Now, given this is a practice statement, clearly IS1 doesn't apply. And I guess if we look at Appendix B here in terms of how we set out the various disclosure elements, we can see at quite a high level in that first row, this is about key features, key aspects, key resources and relationships, which to my mind serves as a useful reminder about materiality. But as we go down this and right to the lower levels in terms of what are described as specific disclosure objectives, I mean, when I look at these, many feel to me to be quite general in nature. And I think that's probably why it's appropriate that all components of the proposed disclosure objectives are framed as requirements. Now, I would voice one note of caution, and that I think we need to be careful not to conflate framing all disclosure elements as requirements with the role that enforcement and assurance can play in helping achieve the overall objectives of management commentary. We've discussed management commentary providing a more holistic portrayal. There's been a focus on coherence and connectivity throughout the narrative and with the financial statements. And I think this inevitably requires preparers, auditors and regulators to step back from a checklist approach and think about the totality of the approach. And I guess I have an element of concern that in terms of framing all of the elements in this manner takes us to something of a checklist approach. That's the paradox here. So I do agree with where we land. I think we just have to be very careful not to mix these things up in terms of will that achieve the overall objective of management commentary in its own right. Thank you.
Okay. Somebody's typing.
Not muted.
Okay. All right. Are we ready to vote? I think so. Can I see who supports this?
No, there's no need to vote on this question because we were just seeking comments on the refinements.
Okay.
So that's it.
All right, that's it. Thank you. Thank you, Joan.
Thank you.